an actual character, technically speaking. It is not an actual, literal person, but it's more of an idea of some characteristics that ought to embody the person who strives to live after God. And so we're going to take a few minutes to look at not only the Proverbs 31 woman, but also what the Proverbs say about the virtuous husband as well. This chapter is much more than just a description of how a wife should be. We're going to look at it like it's some sort of checklist, but it is not to be taken as a literal checklist. That is not at all the point of this passage. And it's really what it is. It's a picture of the interactions between a man and a wife, the things that they do for each other, how they regard each other, how they treat each other. It's a picture lesson for both man and woman. It talks to us about how to be a good spouse. And so that's where can I take it from that sort of viewpoint this morning. Okay. Amber just texted me and said, Juan and Susanna were on their way here and got in a car accident. Got hit by a car. Juan had to go to the hospital because of his knee. So if Amber texts me during class, I know that I need to check it. So let's keep Juan in our prayers. That's the second car accident now they've gotten in about the past year. So, yeah, I know. But anyway, back to what we were saying. It's important that we study this because our marriages are some of the most important relationships in our life. And as I look out at the audience here, I see an audience full of mostly married couples. And so this is very, very applicable to all of us. It's kind of interesting. The last time that I looked at this, heard someone speak on this passage was when we were in California back in May, and we visited the congregation there, and it was Mother's Day. And so the preacher gets up there and launches into, a sermon from Proverbs 31. And, I mean, like, it was... I don't want to say, but it was literally like the guy was looking at this like it was just a checklist. And the only way, and I looked at Amber and my mother-in-law after we walked out of the building and we got in the car and we go, I guess he wants all the wives to feel guilty if they don't make their kids their own clothes. Like, that's basically the only thing you could have possibly taken from that guy's lesson that morning. And I was just like, oh, man. Yeah, I know. And it's like, okay, we have to view these things, as with all of the Proverbs, as what they are, which is they are generalisms and they are idealistic. And they are also to be taken in the culture. Right? These people did not live post-industrial revolution where you just, they had to provide these sorts of things for themselves because you couldn't just go to the store and buy it. You couldn't just order it on Amazon. We live in very different times, and so it's unrealistic to expect. And I don't think that's what he was trying to say, but he relayed lots of stories about what his mother and his grandmother did, and all. It's like that's most of what the sermon was. It was my grandmother back in the day. She did this, that, and the other, and that's admirable. Those things are admirable, but that's just. He didn't. I don't think that's literally his point. I just think that he didn't do the greatest job of explaining how this relates to today and what this means for us as husbands and wives trying to serve God in today's culture. So that's kind of what I want to try and do with it is just that. Our happiness our in life, our spiritual lives are greatly affected by our marriages. And so that means it's something that we have to take great care to work on. Our usefulness to the Lord is affected by the relationship that we have with our spouse. Even our prayers can be helped or hindered by... 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7 says that our prayers can be hindered if we don't treat our spouses with the proper respect. And so, just a little introduction to the chapter. If you weren't aware that Proverbs 31 is actually an acrostic, or verses 10 and following through 31. It's an acrostic. Everybody know what an acrostic is? No. Can anybody explain to me what an acrostic is? Yes. Yeah, so each one starts with the first letter, using the Hebrew alphabet and going from beginning to end. You know, we would say from A to Z. And you know, and so that's what it is. It goes down. So essentially the list is constrained to the number of letters in the Hebrew alphabet. I don't know the Hebrew alphabet. Oh, acrostic? A-C-R-O-S-T-I-C. I guess.
Yeah.
Didn't know I was going to be taking a spelling bee this morning. I'm just going to read a little note. Let's see. From my commentary, it says that this wisdom poem is an acrostic in which each verse begins with the successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The poem begins and ends with the mention of the woman's excellence, verse 10 and verse 30, 29 through 31. The probable intention of putting this together with the acrostic pattern is to show that this woman's character runs the whole range of excellence. The woman is married, as expected in that culture, and she is devoted to the well-being of her household, to which she contributes by her participation in outside economic concerns. At the same time, she makes her home the center of ministry by giving generously to the poor, by instructing her children and household workers in true kindness. So her husband and children enjoy their lot and honor her for her industry. This lofty portrait of excellence sets such a high standard that it can be depressing to godly women today until its purpose is understood. First, the woman embodies in all areas of her life the full character of wisdom commended throughout this book, that is, the book of Proverbs. This shows that even though the concrete situations up to now have generally envisioned a cast of males, the teaching of the entire book is intended for all of God's people. Second, as with other character types, this profile is an ideal, a particular example of full-scale virtue and wisdom toward which the faithful are willing to be molded. It is not expected that any one woman will look exactly like this in every respect. Yes, Pavel.
I want to talk a little bit about Proverbs. Proverbs was created by Solomon and was for young people. And when I was young, I liked reading Proverbs. There was a lot of teaching in Proverbs. But in this case, at the beginning, seemed to be some teaching for the king. The mother of Lemuel, maybe, I'm not sure, maybe Lemuel was Solomon, I don't know. But the mother of Lemuel gave him some advice for king. He was a king. So, later on, what you said about some wives, usually in that time, the wives made their activity at home. At home, not like I have a lot of daughters, and one of them, the last one, says, was sent to me by the mother, says, I want to borrow some money in order to finish my faculty. I says, no, I need to pay your tuition, and was very expensive, like $4,000 per quarter. And because she was the smallest one, he no longer was qualified for grad. So says, I want to borrow a loan, and you will not borrow, I will pay for you, because before me, all my children are equal, have the same rights. So the older boys, they have had grants, and this one, my income was divided only to the three. My wife and his daughter. Mm. She no longer was working. So
yeah.
I have paid for her because at that time I had had a good job and I was into the dream for her. So, in my opinion, in that time, the daughters received some teaching from their mother and some abilities, but now I think it's a good thing to take his daughter to school and take some professional from school.
Yeah, we certainly have to take culture into account here, and that's kind of what this is getting at, is that whatever avenues we deem necessary to cultivate the kind of character that is described here, then certainly we should pursue that. But you're right in saying, you know, this is a little bit different in that the rest of the Proverbs are deemed to have been written by Solomon, but then you get to chapter 31, and it switches and says the words of King Lemuel, an oracle that his mother taught him. And so this is actually, we don't know anything about Lemuel, we don't know who he is, but he basically is relaying some words that his mother had taught to him earlier in his life. And so he is just writing down this oracle that his mother taught him. And of course, as with all the Proverbs, having been written by Solomon, we understand the wisdom is found therein is wisdom that comes directly from God. Because Solomon was divinely blessed with wisdom beyond which anyone in the history of the world ever had. It was everything that he spoke was because of the prayer that he prayed to God and asked for wisdom to govern God's people, and God blessed him with that. And so he had understanding that is just far and above what anyone has ever had before or since. And so it then behooves us to look at the wisdom that's found here in the book of Proverbs and try and apply it in our lives and listen to it carefully. And so the first nine verses is actually a little bit different in that that starts off the chapter before we get to this. We tend to call it, you know, the worthy woman, verses 10 through the end of the chapter. And in the first nine verses, it says, "What are you doing, my son? What are you doing, son of my womb? What are you doing, son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women, your ways to those who destroy kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to take strong drink, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted. Give strong drink to the one who is perishing and wine to those in bitter distress. Let them drink and forget their poverty and remember their misery no more. Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and needy." So essentially what his mother is telling him is, look, if you are going to be a king, these are some things that you need to do. You need to make sure, first thing he says is, don't give your strength to women. Well, what do you think she means by that?
Well, I have a note that says, well.
Okay. Well, that certainly gives kind of the same idea. Yeah, that's kind of the idea that we get is, you know, and the idea is more in terms of a king in that time, they would have had lots of women. There would have been a harem, and of course Solomon did that very thing. You know, he had all these women. They tore away his heart after God. And you also have to think about the money that went along with that, the strength of having and the time. And so certainly she's saying, hey, look, you know, you really need to be devoted to one woman. That's God's ideal for marriage ever from the beginning. Don't give your strength to many women. Focus on one. And then it seems like when she gets to verse 10 and later, she's focusing on, okay, that one that you're focused on, this is what, you know, hopefully she's going to look like. And then, of course, it talks about wine and strong drink, you know, making sure that obviously you keep your sobriety so that you can rule well. And then talks about open your mouth for the mute and the rights of those who are destitute. You know, speaking, being an administrator of justice, I mean, speaking for those who can't speak for themselves, to judge righteously, etc. So, some ideals for the king here at the beginning, but then when you get to the latter part of the chapter, it seems to be more of an exposition on what is said in verse 3. Okay, so let's get into this beginning in verse 10. "An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hand, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hands to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Now again, we want to remember that this is not a checklist. What we're looking at is the character that lies behind each of these actions. That's what we want to focus on when we look at this chapter. So the first thing we see, an excellent wife who can find, she is more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts her, and he will have no lack of gain. So when you look at verse 11, what characteristic do you see that underlies her husband's trust in her?
Noble character.
Okay, a noble character. Wisdom. Bob? And so that's kind of where what I see here is trustworthy. Her husband trusts her. She is trustworthy and wise. He doesn't have to worry because she is, while he's off doing, kingly things, which of course, translating that to today, most men are the primary breadwinners. They go, and just typically speaking, they go and they go to work and they trust their wife to take care of the things that need to be taken care of as far as the home and their children. And he goes and does what he has to do, takes care of his responsibilities, and doesn't worry about whether or not everything else that needs to be taken care of that's in her responsibility is taken care of. It just doesn't cross his mind to worry about whether those things are being taken care of or not. And it says that he will have no lack of gain. And I think that this applies to everything, whether it's, as Pavel mentioned, the taking care of the education of children. And he's right. I mean, he goes on and talks about verse 26, the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. That's really speaking to, teaching her children. And so, and of course, her example in the ways that she does other things. But obviously, there's other things that she takes care of as far as the home is concerned. She is fully engaged and in, I don't know how to put it, but, you know, profitable industry, you know, in various ways. And so, again, just this idea, we certainly should not take from this, well, you know, the woman only should only work in the home, right? I mean, you look at this, and she's doing all kinds of stuff. She's working with her own hands. She's bringing in food for her household. She is considering a field and buying it. She's engaged with her husband in taking care of the household in myriad ways. Okay, so certainly he trusts her with all of that. If he didn't trust her, she wouldn't have access to the means to consider a field and buy it and do something with it. And so this shows in a complete implicit trust. And how do we get to that point? Yeah, go ahead. No, this is not like, you know, you're going to get married at 21 and, man, you know, she's already going to be like this. Like, no. This is a maturity process. This is growth. This is, obviously, this is further down the line, you know, and again, this is an ideal. This is something that we're working towards, and it's not, again, this isn't like all of us are going to be able to contain all of these things all the time. I mean, these are things that as Christians, as God's people, we have to be willing to work towards. And so this process of the relationship between a husband and wife is not something that is just going to automatically be this way. It's something that has to be worked towards. Karen?
Well, I mean, you just alluded to what I was going to say is that this mirrors preparation to be a Christian all our lives and how we develop as Christians. The development of this person mirrors all of those things. It's like when you said, you know, we don't have to make our children's clothes anymore. But what that brings to mind is, it doesn't mean that I should learn how to sew, because it's a preparation that I might need in the future for my family. You know, it doesn't mean that I shouldn't develop something as a Christian because I need it in the future for my Christianity.
Yeah, what a great point. Just because you don't need it now doesn't mean that you won't ever need it. So there's some wisdom there in preparing for the future.
And I think that also reflects the character of the husband.
Yes.
And that he does trust you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's not to be looked down upon as incapable. She's not to be looked upon with an eye that says, you know, I don't know. Or putting his thumb, you know, on her all the time, everything, scrutinizing everything. That's not the way the husband is supposed to treat her wife. And that's another thing I want to make sure that we do with this, is that we look at it from both sides. Because marriage is a partnership. Marriage, first and foremost, is a partnership. And as we kind of said in the introduction, the Proverbs deal, I think a lot of times women get frustrated because they say, well, where's the chapter on the man? Well, the whole thing. I mean, the whole book of Proverbs, in this chapter too, it's, you have to see it from both sides. These are all about what the ideals that Christians, both men and women, should be striving towards. And this marriage is a partnership, so we have to view it that way. And it's something that continues to develop over time. So he trusts that she is going to take care of the things that need to be taken care of, generally speaking, whatever that means for you and your household. She will not squander that which is given to her, but use it in a manner that benefits both of them. And it goes on to say that she does him good in verse 12 and not harm all the days of her life. And you look at that and you go, well, that seems kind of self-explanatory, right? I mean, you would just expect a wife to do good to her husband and not harm, right? Have you ever seen any examples of women who do their husband harm rather than good? Certainly, unfortunately, it happens, and vice versa. Again, don't get me wrong. Certainly there are plenty of husbands that do their wives harm and not good all the days of their life. The point here is that, also I think we need to focus on the fact that it's all the days of her life. It's not something that wanes, rather it's something that should increase. I have down here, she's filled with an enduring love. It endures. It goes, even throughout all the ups and downs of life and of marriage, she doesn't take downs in the valleys in our marriages that we go through and use them as excuses to pummel him, you know, or speak ill of him or anything like that. You know, we're going to get down later where it says that, you know, they praise her in the gates. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, he praises her. So there's, you know, it goes both ways. There's praise. There's an enduring love. She's devoted to doing her husband good all of her life. Not some mix, not just a hot and cold, not just in the valleys or in the mountains, but all the time, all the days of her life. You know, when we get married, what tends to be going through our heads when we get married about our future, about our relationship? We are just, it's total bliss. Everything is amazing. No one has ever been more in love than we are. Our life is going to be perfect. And, you know, everything is just, it's just this fairy tale, right? But then, and then reality says, no, life is not perfect. But when we get married, though, we stand before our friends and our family, and we stand before God, and what do we say? Yeah, I mean, traditional marriage vows state what? What? For better or worse, till death do us part. That's this. That's right. It's through our difficulties and our struggles that we are made strong, that we grow. And it strengthens the love that there is in that relationship. And again, these are biblical principles that apply not just to marriage, but to Christians in general. Our difficulties that we endure is what makes us stronger, what we learn from, what we grow from. Okay? And so just as she vowed when she got married to love, honor, cherish, you know, for better or worse, till death do us part, that's a vow. And that's a vow that we have to take seriously. I mean, what is a vow? What is a vow? It's a promise. It's a covenant that you make between yourself and another person. And in the case of marriage vows, it's a vow not only between yourself and your spouse, but also with God. And God takes that very, very seriously. Scripture makes that very plain.
You notice, though, some of the marriages today, they vow certain things that they never did before, like, I don't have to obey you all the time, or I don't have to do this or that.
Yeah, unfortunately, marriage vows have changed. It seems like pretty consistent. They were pretty consistent for a long time, but you know, lately it seems like it's as long as we both love each other is kind of what ends up getting inserted, and that's, well, like, kind of defeats the purpose of marriage, and that's pretty sad. Yes.
Of course, with God in mind, that should be the first bond. Hopefully, marry a Christian that you have the same bond that reached heaven, so you can overcome the struggle and pray together.
Yeah, it certainly speaks to the importance of marrying someone that has the same goals, views, attitudes, beliefs as you. It's going to make it a whole lot easier. Yeah, your example can be a huge factor. And of course, the other thing about Ephesians 5, too, is that really, that passage is about the relationship between Christ and the church. And, you know, it talks about it as being a mystery, and this mystery is revealed through the husband and the wife relationship. And so, again, it just goes to this point that we were saying earlier, which is, when we study husband-wife relationships, we also study Christian and Christ relationships.
And I've taught a lot of ladies' classes where ladies come up to me and they say, "Well, I don't like Jesus Christ." And I said, "Well, look at 1 Corinthians
1.
It's supposed to be submitting to each other. It's not a runaway street.
Right.
You know, but it's always
left
out.
Right. As, yeah, we submit to one another as we submit to the Lord. That's what it's about. Our submission to one another helps us learn how to submit to the Lord. It's not about just, well, you know, we want to keep, you know, this, we're in the patriarchal society and we want to keep the women down. And that's not the point at all. It's about everything in our life, all the relationships that we have in life, whether that's with our children, parent to child, husband to wife, friend, within the church, all of those relationships are built into our lives by God to teach us about our relationship with Him and to teach us about what love and what self-sacrifice really looks like and what the love of a father looks like. You know, you don't understand. Those things are built in to teach us how God views us and how we should view and respond to God. And so it kind of goes both ways. The more we can focus and build upon one, the more it helps us with the other. And so that's what this chapter is really all about. It's about growing in our relationship with God. It's about growing as a Christian and looking to these ideals and being willing to be molded after the character of God. And so we need to really keep that in mind as we go through this. Again, these are ideals. They're not. It's not perfection. It's not meant to make us depressed because, man, there's no way I could ever be like that. It's simply about trying to grow after the image of Christ, being willing to be molded by Him, and of course that's going to help us in our relationships with one another. All right, so now that I got off of that, I went on that tangent. It's not too much to expect people to abide by these vows that they took. It's not too much to expect to love your spouse all the days of your life. All right, so the next section then, he gets into verse 13, talks about, you know, she seeks wool and flax, works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchants, brings her food from afar, rises while it's yet night, provides food for her household and portion for her maidens. Well, what's the point there? What's the underlying principle? Okay, she's giving.
Industrious.
Thinks to the future.
She knows what her responsibilities are.
Knows her responsibilities, is willing to provide.
She's moving. She's
busy. Yeah.
She's working at stuff. She's doing it. You know, and it's like we always say it so many times. Do something.
Yeah.
Do something.
Yeah. Not a busy body, but actually busy. You know, she is working. She's not in idleness. Again, that's something that's pressed very often in the New Testament, is that we are not supposed to be idle. We're supposed to be working.
She's working toward a goal.
Yeah. Yeah, and that goal is what?
Her household.
The taking care of her household.
She's also thinking of others. If you read the last line, she's thinking of her maidens and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not just her husband, it's not just her children, but also anyone who is in her sphere of influence, in her sphere of taking care of. Being generous to others, that's something that is also comes through here several times as being generous to others. Joe?
In 13, it says that in my translation, and works with her hands in delight and put those things willingly. So, not to always check the shipping, the half day, but to come from a heart of service to anybody that is
Yeah, she's willingly, not begrudgingly, but willingly doing these things. Not constantly complaining about it or anything like that, but doing so because she loves fulfilling her role, her God-given role as a wife and a mother. Yeah, not being forced at all. But this does bring up the question, though. where does the wife's responsibilities lie? Where do her responsibilities lie? Okay, her family, help me for her husband. What did you say, Jim?
To God.
Ultimately to God. Yeah, so the idea that we should sit here and limit this to anyone's faith, women, again, we said this already, but women shouldn't work outside of the home. That's not the picture that we get here at all. Whatever a family needs to do to provide for itself is what you need to do. And you need to figure out the best way that you possibly can for your family. It doesn't matter as long as the family needs are met. That's what we're looking for here. Yeah, Pavel?
Usually the activity of wife or woman is to cover the needs of their family. So it's for food, it's for clothing. If she is a hardworking, she has more items than needs. Extra needs over the needs. So, because she is industrious, hard working, she has extra things over the needs, and with these things, she can help poor and in need. If she's not hard working, cannot help those in poor. For instance, a lazy man cannot help anybody.
Right. Yeah. She's working, and again, she's got practical skills. There's things that she can do that are useful both inside and outside of the home, and she uses those abilities, those God-given abilities, to her family's benefit and to God's glory. She's generous, does so willingly. And, it's like she's like the ships bringing her food from afar. I thought this was kind of funny. The commentary I have here says she does not literally sail the seas. No, that's not what it's saying. But she goes out of her way to make sure that she has food for her family. And again, I think of just being prudent, being wise with the things. You said there may be a time where you don't have money to go and buy new clothes, so you do learn to patch those clothes up so that you don't have to buy new ones, or just being prudent. So instead of buying new, maybe you go down to Value Village and get some used stuff, because especially when you have little kids, it's like they're going to wear it like three times anyway, and then they're not going to fit it anymore. So why waste money on new stuff? Unless, again, there are certain people that I know that are more well off, and they do buy new clothes intending fully when their kids are done to just give them to other people. So again, it just depends on your situation. But again, there's prudence there in looking to the future and what am I going to do with this when it's done, or how am I going to provide for my kids and my family whenever the next phase comes along. There's... Huh?
Have a garage sale.
Have a garage sale. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. So it's many different ways in which we can go about helping provide for ourselves.
Yeah. Look at the library. She brings food from a bar. I think she's supposed to stay here, some store, buy whatever it is. All the world can have that. So my thought might be that she might have looked up the old other traders that may come back from India.
Other things, although it's in a dream, see which was or not.
Yeah, I mean, this is, she's clearly going, making sure that that everything is taken care of, that there's we don't want to attach too much specificity. It's just that he trusts her to take care of the family and take care of the kids, do what needs to be done, and she's more than willing to do so. And so that's where we're going to stop this morning. Yeah, one more comment. Okay.